when the most dangerous lead in soccer is nil-nil and up a man, it's That's So MLS, the North American soccer podcast of myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
It's me.
You can find us on iTunes at That's So MLS and at www.thatsomls.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
Do those things. Listen. Well, I mean, you're already listening, but help us out. Rate
Nick,
the thing.
How was your week in soccer?
My week in soccer was not amazing. I didn't watch a ton of soccer this weekend. But I'll give we don't talk about European soccer much on here by design. But I will say my English team, Arsenal, went out with a bit of a bang. 5-0. I'll take it at this point. That's about as good as my soccer weekend got. And fantasy-wise, it wasn't a great week. I'm falling behind. I'm still second in our league, but it wasn't a great soccer weekend.
Mm. Do you think that our now former Arsenal manager Arsene Wenger is going to come to MLS?
There could be some openings, but God, I hope not, because I'm on team. It's time for a change.
But you don't want them to fire Siggy Schmidt and have Arsene Wenger be the new LA Galaxy coach?
Oh, are you kidding me? I'd love that for that to happen. Just start selling off all the promising young players from LA. Just kidding. There are no promising young players in LA. Oh dear.
Well, okay. Actually, when
well,
you
no, that's
when
not
you
true.
Talk about
that's
LA,
unfair.
When you talk about LA, I thought that in their 3-2 loss against Houston, unfortunately, Ola Kamara did show some amount of shine.
He did, and if we want to start there, I thought that although LA came out on the wrong side of this, and I commend Ziggy Schmidt for saying it like it is, and that they just haven't been good enough, and something needs to change. It is good to see that that front three is really working well together. With Dos Santos and Kamara and Ibrahimovic actually seeming to have a bit of chemistry, which, if they can figure it out, could be a pretty potent thing. This wasn't a comfortable win for Houston by any stretch. So I thought it was good, but can we talk about Kyoto's two free kicks? Like, right into the beginning of the first half and right in the beginning of the second half. My God, man. As a Vancouver fan, the fact that we're playing them next week, I'm just like, or this week rather, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's kind of a Real Salt Lake situation where some weeks they like on a week like this they can really form a challenge that can't be beat, but you can find a way to come out in front of them. It's all kind of a day-to-day thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear that they like to flood the box with numbers, which does leave them prone at times, but they've just got so much pace and so much attacking power. It does make it difficult for teams to close them down. I mean, I think LA Galaxy has started to turn a new leaf and seems to be doing significantly better than they have. Not seems to be. They are doing much better than they have been doing overall. But something still quite hasn't landed for them. What do you think it's going to take for LA Galaxy to really turn things around for their season?
I think that the development of the chemistry on attack is a big thing. We've seen some key moves. It's kind of like as wonderful as Zlatan Ibrahimovic is in terms of his goal scoring. Mm-hmm. What we've seen from players in MLS in terms of like what makes sort of the older veteran successful is an ability to switch back and forth between being a goal scorer and being a provider, to be able to bring up the play of people around you. That's happening. And on that Ola Kamara goal, I really felt that they did have that team effort. But I think it's still coming along a bit. And also they just need to... they need to put things together defensively. This was a game, we've critiqued this ever since Zlatan arrived in terms of their propensity to give stuff up. But this losing it in the 90th minute like they did was very unfortunate for them, because they, especially in the second half, they had the lion's share of possession, but couldn't. But it wasn't theirs in the end.
No, and you still see a little bit of lack of focus left over from last year, where the defensive mids and the back four just don't seem to quite be on the same page, and they're not quite able to shut things down when they should. I mean, when you've got a ball ping-ponging around in the box like that in the 87th minute, it's pretty hard to defend. I've been in plays like that, and considering I was a goalkeeper on Sunday for a rec team, and we lost 12-0, I have deep sympathy for goalkeepers and for defenders. It's always easier, or it's always harder than it looks, but yeah, LA Galaxy just seems to, for as much money as they've spent on that back line, they just don't seem to really have a plan, and they don't really seem to have much of an ability to stay with the man and play to the whistle. And that, if there's a theme to this week, yet again, that kind of seems to be it, is it's players just sort of caught ball watching and waiting for the whistle to go or an offside to be called, rather than do their defensive duties and do whatever they need to do to keep the ball out of the net.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Real Salt Lake, they had a match where
they did have a match.
They had a heck of a match there where it was, speaking of unfortunate matches, where they scored in the 13th minute in with what I thought was a nice little ball, a nice little chip, mm-hmm. Corey Baird. But it all fell apart in the course of about 20 minutes as they eventually lost the game 3-0.
3-1.
3-1, yes, sorry, yes. Both the Dom Dwyer, I know I've been critical of Dom Dwyer, but his goal there was pristine.
Yeah. If anything, I mean, last week MLSsoccer.com was talking about, is Orlando the new team to beat and going to win everything? Which they like to do every week with whatever team seems to be winning. But I believe this is 5 wins in a row now for Orlando,
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. And this is also, Justin Merrim still hasn't quite found his feet. Mm-hmm. And still seems to be a little bit shaky. He had a number of chances that he just sort of sliced at and that didn't really do much. But, you know, we talked about even in the preseason how the link up between Dwyer and Clushton was going to matter so much. And we saw that in full force. Orlando still really seems quite, like, without any defensive protocol or plan going into games, and seem awfully shaky. But offensively, they're just so strong, it's incredibly hard to get the ball off of them. And when they're creating so many chances, that sort of becomes their defense.
Yes.
I don't think this is going to last all season. Orlando seems to me like a team that we could see a bit of a summer slump with. But when you've got some of your key players still not performing quite at the levels they need to be, but you're putting away games like crucial games and racking up points, to me this was such a great example of how good having Will Johnson, Clushton, Dwyer, etc. on the pitch together, how good they can be. And I really felt like this game, they kind of played in first gear for the first 45 and maybe switched into second, possibly third gear in the second half. But
yeah,
I feel like there's a lot more to come from Orlando. And so the fact that they're doing so well while still sorting out team chemistry and having a few defensive problems bodes very, very well. I mean, if you've just won 5 games in a row and the biggest critique is defensively you look a little shaky at times, like, that's something to build on, I think.
And you're not giving, like, as much as, like, you could say defensively it's a little shaky, they're still not giving up, correct me if I'm wrong, these sort of 9-goal thrillers, you know, where they, like 3-1 is still pretty, they were exploited at least once at the beginning there, but, you know, I feel like it hasn't been necessarily a LAFC style story of, well, we'll score as much as we have to.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I know that that's sort of becoming an MLS tactic, but I do see that Peter Vermes is trying to put together a little bit more of a full team this year and have a little bit more of a focus, and it hasn't quite been sorted out defensively. But another really crucial win for them that, you know, if they do have a summer slump, they're racking up so many points that, you know, they can afford to lose three games in a row in the summer now. And there's a lot of teams that are struggling mid-table that haven't been able to put away games like these. On paper, you'd always favor Orlando to win this game. RSL was lucky to get themselves into it and give a good fight. But as we've seen, teams aren't won on paper.
Now, my if you identified or the MLS soccer team to beat may be Orlando, but mine pretty consistently has been New York Red Bulls. And I don't think anybody would have predicted at the meeting of New York Red Bull and New York City FC that it would be such a lopsided result with a 4-0 scoreline.
Certainly not when somebody was picking their fantasy team this week, that's for sure. Glad I got rid of Bradley Wright Phillips in favor of David Villa. You're welcome.
No.
This is how it happens. I think I secretly control all sports because whatever player I pick will suck. And I'll replace the player that's going to score a brace or a hat trick with somebody that's going to eat shit all weekend. This was, I think, I want to get your thoughts about this game. Because it was a little, like you said, nobody could have predicted that this is what would have happened. I sort of thought like maybe a 1-1 or a 2-1 victory to either team. I certainly didn't think New York Red Bulls were out of it. But the fact that they just plowed through New York City FC, who's been doing so well, 4-0, what do you take away from this?
Well, we've talked a little bit about, I think that New York Red Bull's success this year has been due to sort of an increased distribution, not necessarily of like goal scoring chances, because it's not like, I guess they are kind of scoring by committee. But you would even look at their top five, Davis, Adams, Velo, Kaku, Royer, and Wright Phillips, and you wouldn't be able to like pick, you know, who the, you wouldn't necessarily, well, I guess Royer is really getting there. But I think the Wright Phillips has hit such an interesting streak in his career, and I think that he set up he played a big role in setting up Kaku's first goal.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they've gotten chemistry in an attack that's centered around him, and then also have been able to get Kaku up and running, which took a minute, has made them really dangerous compared to what is still a one person attack with New York. Not that the rest of the New York attack isn't that good, but everything still funnels through Villa.
It's true. But the really fascinating thing to me about this game is that when you look at how many players Red Bulls have lost or sold in the last 2-3 years, and the fact that they come out and just destroy the best team in the league, that seems to be untouchable. And we've talked about New York City FC's defensive problems, but nobody's able to exploit them because they're just so good in the attacking end.
Yeah.
Right. Everything does run through BWP, but then, of course, it begs the question of, okay, so they have a runaway season, but if, God forbid, age ever catches up with Bradley Wright Phillips, are they out of the running? But I think this was one of those games where you saw they're not. They've got such great talent in their team, and it's not just the new players they've brought in, it's the younger players, that they just seem to have this incredible system. I also thought tactically they read New York City FC incredibly well, is that they exploited everything. New York City FC doesn't do a lot of things wrong, but they're not always great at getting numbers back. And New York Red Bulls flooded the box with 5 or 6 players on every counterattack, and that was the thing that broke them. Mm-hmm. And we know that the Red Bulls have pace, and they use that to a T. So I thought just tactically, I actually thought this was probably the best coaching play of The Weeknd is that New York City FC probably went into that game thinking like, okay, we've got them pegged. You know, we'll score a couple of early goals and we'll hold possession and beat them. And New York Red Bulls played sort of uncharacteristically, just took the game to them. They are a team that likes to attack, but they're also a team that can absorb pressure.
Well, this has been the sort of the mystery and sort of frustration of New York City FC over the last 2 years. And we usually talk about this with Toronto, that they have a season where they're consistently high in the standings, and then when they sort of hit the wrong matchup, all of a sudden they are extremely beatable. But they spend the rest of their time like winning 3-0, you know, like they are dominant. It's not like they don't have a great season. It's not like they don't look like a great team. But once they run into a team that has a game plan for them, it's they have been unable to adapt.
Yeah, and that's where, unless they can make some significant change or add another piece, I see New York City FC making the playoffs and getting beaten in the second round, maybe the third. But because you're right, is that at the end of the day, they are a team that tactically you can figure out. And if you can just overload them, and it's counterintuitive, because sometimes I think it means giving David Villa a little bit of extra space to flood the other players. You know, on at least two of the goals, Bradley Wright Phillips is all alone. There's nobody near him marking him. And you just think, like, I mean, he's a hard player to mark for sure. Mm-hmm. But you do that right, and, you know, you finally open up chances for yourself. But it still seems like New York City FC's defense is just still a little bit green and a little bit naive. And I don't think they've had a hell of a lot of work to do, because New York City is so good in possession. And so it's one of those things that, because their attack is so good and because they're so good in possession, the defense is not often tested.
Yes. I would say that despite my insistence not to sleep on New York Red Bulls, one team that cannot be ignored is Atlanta, which was able to snag a valuable road win. What did you think of this one?
So I didn't see much of this match. I wasn't terribly surprised by the result. I knew Chicago would give them a little bit more run for their money than some of their other opponents did. But it's interesting to me, because I think Atlanta still, they seem to be having a very similar season to last year, where they're very flashy. They're very good at winning games by a lot of goals. But it's closing out games like these against key opponents like Chicago that I think will make the difference. It wasn't a fantastic game. We still see some of the weaknesses with Atlanta, but I mean, I'm amazed that they were able to hold on to Almiron. And my big question is just for how much longer. He's just so good. He really doesn't look like he should be playing in MLS at points.
Well, I feel like the thing is that there are now so many players like Martinez that it's like they have set themselves up for the future, that when they do lose Almiron, obviously nobody can just lose a player of that quality and not see some sort of impact. But they've been able to have such a smooth alternating attack that I feel like they'll be able to keep it up. Even missing a piece, especially if they're able to make some sort of move in the second transfer window if they do lose it.
And this is also a team that has been struggling to find a place for Barco after spending all that money, kind of in a way not needing him. And it was good to see him perform well this weekend. But yeah, realistically, I just, every time I see Almiron play, I just think, his days in North America are numbered. He's got to be going to Europe. He really is consistently that good.
Nagby was a big part of that first goal, so you can see that he's also settling into Atlanta. And I think that certainly he's somebody that you could look at As things continue, if Almiron is to leave, is somebody that can maybe step up into a bigger role.
Yep, I agree. So Canadian teams have not fared particularly well in recent weeks. And this is maybe not a shocking surprise because Philadelphia has not been great this season. But Toronto FC has came back and they've done okay now, returning their focus to the league. But I don't think it could be understated that this was a really important win, regardless of who it was against. They needed to get a win, and a sizable win, to just motivate the players a little. What do you take away from their blowout of Philadelphia 3-0 win? Is it worth celebrating, or is it a foregone conclusion?
I didn't get to see this Friday game. I would say that the biggest issue, what was great for them in terms of being able to succeed in this occasion, and why I think that this success could maybe last for a bit, is that they are going to be missing Jozy Altidore for some time.
So what happened there?
Now, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, like, this is the issue. We spent a lot of time talking about lost points and lost focus, but I think a bigger issue, than their table position coming out of the Champions League, is how banged up they were coming out of the Champions League. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming until the second half, to understand how truly banged up they really were, how much of a problem that can be. Because now when you're trying to recover and recover your table position, you're also doing it with a weakened size. So he had bone fragments taken out of his foot.
That sounds bad.
That's bad. And I don't know. I don't know enough about how he got it. Perhaps that's the kind of thing where, he just sort of developed it over a couple of hard matches. But what's his prognosis in terms of when he's going to be back? I think he's missing 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, foot injuries are not usually quick ones. He's not really had an electric start to the season, whether in CCL or otherwise. So, you know, does it open up possibilities for other players? I mean, like, Altidore is Altidore. I'm not trying to shit on the guy, but, you know, the case could be made that perhaps they don't need him at this point.
Wasn't that the deal actually for the final, that he was like falling apart during the final and tried to gut through it again, but wasn't able to do it? I'm trying to remember.
It sounds about right.
Oh, you know what? He was listed before the game, and this is an interesting note on just sort of how clubs handle these sort of these injury pieces while they develop. He was listed as a hamstring strain before this game, and then got bone fragments taken out of his foot. So clearly, they weren't 100% sure of what was happening until it occurred.
It's difficult. Like, I get it. It's difficult to manage your players and know what they're capable of, especially if you have somebody like Altidore, who's probably chomping at the bit and saying, "No, I'm fine, coach. I'm fine. I can play." And ultimately, you want to trust your players. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next little bit. They don't have an easy stretch of games, which reminds me, I need to try to see if I can get tickets. I think they're playing Dallas and Toronto while I'm there. But you know, this is the thing: is that this was always the gamble. Now they have games in hand, of course, but as you said, they gambled a lot on CCL in terms of just the physical toll it would take on players. And you have to think now, if Giovinco goes down with anything, they're not a team that's in form. And that was the difference last year, is when they suffered injuries to their key players, they were also a team in form. The piece that continues to be really crucial for them that I think can and will see them through is Vasquez.
Yes. I think that he was always a big part of last year. And when you – so I've talked a little bit about, you know, the A team and B team. As you start to integrate those two parts with players like Akeche, I think that having Vasquez there is very important to calm everyone down.
Yeah.
So that is key. One team that I don't think we expected – to have as good of a week as they did was Montreal.
Indeed, we did not when we briefly thought of putting Piatti on our fantasy team and making him captain and then decided against it and put T.L. Bunbury there instead. However, we cannot rewrite history. This was a big, big win for Montreal, a team that struggled so much against a team that has... against all odds, performed incredibly well and done massive things this season. And also just recently sold their star / non-existent midfielder Li Nguyen, who has gone to LAFC like every other player.
the league Montreal, win match is over.
What, like, 4-2. How did this happen? What do you think of it? Do we take much away from this? Is this the resurgence of Montreal? Does this prove that they are a good team that has just sucked a little bit in the past? What do we make of this?
Piatti's the best. I think that's the key answer. Is that this team runs a lot of what works through Ignacio Piatti. I also am very happy to see... the presence of Anthony Jackson Hamel on the score sheet, because I think that not only is he an amazing Canadian talent, but this is not a team that can really afford to be one-dimensional in any way.
Nope.
And having him be the player that we know he can be really helps both elevate the play and take pressure off of Piatti.
Absolutely. I mean, Piatti had, he got the goal. He had a number of assists and just an overall great game. So Samuel Piette had a number of really crucial tackles and passes as well that really kept Montreal in this game. But they just looked so, so comfortable. Now, and I also want to point, Jackson Hamel's first goal was just a real thing of beauty. And, you know, not a... a golazo necessarily, but just a clever, cheeky attempt. And I think that was his third at that point by the time he got the first goal. Mm-hmm. What still is kind of troubling is that Montreal goes up 4-0 and then concedes two goals late into the second half. And you still feel like, especially with the marking on those last two goals, is it's just kind of non-existent. And that's where we've seen Montreal punished. So we can say... hallelujah, Montreal scored four goals and blew out New England. But really, towards the end, it looked very uncomfortable and things started to break down. So that, for me, Montreal has to find some way of playing where everything isn't predicated on Piatti making the play. What do you think is the key for Montreal having a successful season and pulling themselves out of the slump that they've been in?
I think we talked a little bit... You may recall that the last Montreal-New England game featured Sapir Tider being thrown out on a really sort of boneheaded play in the 13th minute. So I think not having somebody sent off for a stupid reason really helped them be able to be in the position. Maybe they had a four. Maybe this was the 4-2 game we were going to get if that had not occurred. I don't want to pick too hard on some of the players that have had rough seasons in defense, but I think the switch to... you don't see Ken Kralicki in this lineup, but I think that that's a positive.
Yeah. It is tough. I mean, a defender's life is not easy, but...
He was, I think, in the midfielder role, and to have Piet in such a... Piet be strong and be in that position was a lot. A lot nicer.
Agreed. the one Canadian team that did not do well this weekend as the outlier basically had this game handed to them. And for the most part, looked like they could have won it or at least gotten something out of it. And yet, a crucial error meant that they lost. Our dear beloved Vancouver Whitecaps went to Minnesota away, playing against 10 men. Early possession, lots of shots. Somehow lose the game, 1-0. Is your hand above the panic button yet, or are there positives to take away from this game?
I try not to be like I try to when I think of these things, and especially as lots of fans are quick to call for the heads of people like Rabo. I try to be a big picture thinker and try to, like, you know, realize that not everything is gonna be solved by a move that's that drastic. But the issue is, and I think this is what people were worried about in the win against Real Salt Lake, is that the team still seems like they're still so weird to watch. Like, it's hard to know. The buzzword in terms of critique is ambition, and I don't know that that's 100%. I don't know exactly how accurate that is. But it's kind of like it was really bizarre in the Salt Lake game in that last 20 minutes after the sending off to watch them, like, just their attitude on the ball and stuff was really weird. And I think that it was a similar scenario. I don't know, maybe as much as one of the ways that a team can benefit from having a player taken off as Minnesota had, is to exploit more space. It kind of, would you agree with maybe the idea that Vancouver didn't seem ready to play a team that was a man down, like that didn't seem to have necessarily like a specific game plan, and it maybe was doing a little improvisation?
They've never looked ready to play 10 men. I can't think of a match in the last 3 years where they've, and it's happened a number of times, and I don't think they've won a single one of those matches. They just do seem to lack an overall game plan, and I appreciate wanting to give players the opportunity to express themselves, but mm-hmm. You're right in that, like, this was all Vancouver for much of the first half, with a ton of shots, and Anthony Blondell, if there's a bright point to this game, looked fantastic. And
yeah,
you know, it was only through the heroics of Minnesota's goalkeeper's name, which is Shuttleworth. Sorry, I knew I'd get there.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby Shuttleworth had some amazing saves, and I really felt like kept Minnesota in the game. So I don't want to take anything away from them. But just, again, failed to put it away. And like you said, failed to have much of a look, at least a look of a game plan. And then, I'm sorry to say it, but the goal comes off of Aha and Waston in particular ball watching.
Yeah.
And it's bouncing around in the box. And Ibarra, it's just so easy for him to get that rebound and stick it in. And I know it's easy to say this on replays, but just somebody's got to deal with that ball. And for the height that Aha and Waston have between them, that it falls to Ibarra and he's able to get a shot across. Like, it was just such an example of everything that's gone wrong for us. And when you look at, like, the only other teams that have given up as many goals, I believe, are Montreal and an RSL, I believe. I know Montreal is one of them. But, you know, this just shoddy defense, granted, it's only a 1-0 loss, but against a team like Minnesota, they should have won this game. And I feel like the writing isn't quite on the wall, but boy, it's starting to leach out of the plaster a little bit.
The word that everybody kept saying after the Kansas City game was culture. Is there something fundamentally wrong with the club culture? And a certain amount of that comes from the manager. And I don't know that it's a panic button move, but compared to where we've been in past weeks, I don't know that I look at this lineup, especially the players that were on the field. I know some people are critical of Bernie Abini. But when you look at the players who are on the field and how they performed, this isn't, especially offensively, this is not a thing where I say, well, they weren't good enough.
Yeah.
Right? Like it wasn't a specifically a case where one player was like obviously fucking up a lot. This mm-hmm. was a group failure to kind of rise to the occasion. You're right to point out that it was a 1-0 game. And there absolutely should have, and despite the fact that they had a lights out goalie, there definitely should have been something there to find.
Yeah.
That's what people want. That's what people are looking to see, is a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And it didn't really seem ever to be in that to be that way. I think that we've been seeing great performances by Davies.
Mm-hmm.
I think just in terms of he's been not like. I think last year and earlier in his career, we've seen him make these long breaking runs and maybe not have a finish at the end of it, or maybe do have a finish at the end of it. But he's starting to evolve his game a little bit, where he can make these dribbling runs and then play it off to somebody.
Yeah.
Like he's starting, instead of being like, well, if he puts himself in this position, can he finish? He's starting to be able to put other people in opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty tasty prospect if he's able to add that to his game. But I still think it speaks volumes that he said, like, Vancouver doesn't look like a bad team on the pitch a lot of the time. But then a couple of simple mistakes happen, and they're just not quite focused enough or don't have that sense of urgency, and all of a sudden they're behind, and all of a sudden they've lost a game. And that, I think, is the frustrating part, is that we're not watching a shit team that has no hope. It's frustrating to watch a team with so much talent and so much individual ability on the field utterly lack any idea, it seems, of, like, what's the game plan here? And I think that's the thing where criticism is rightfully being aimed at Robbo this year, is that in the past he seems to have had a bit more of a game plan going in and been a bit more of a tactician, and we've just seen that seems to have gone out the window, where it's all about the formation and the players he puts on the pitch, etc., fine lines, but at the end of the day, what's the game plan for beating a team like Minnesota? And it's not, you can't just say, you know, well, we didn't execute it correctly in every single week. It looked positive from Vancouver for the most part, but you've got to put games like this to bed, or at least come away with a point. But truly, you know, they should have scored 2 or 3 in the first half. Somebody, you know, Ibarra's goal, you know, whatever, defensive errors happen, but, you know, if to me this game should have been 3-1, not 1-0, especially playing down a man for so much of the game. That just showed too that Robbo doesn't have an ability to adapt his squad to attack that and exploit it. They actually looked worse from the moment the sending off happened. Vancouver seemed to completely lose focus and really didn't have many good chances.
This is the thing about that second half, is it there is a focus and intensity that's lacking. And this, I think this is what people complain about when it comes to the fine lines, is an inability to bring, and I said urgency already, but that sense of urgency when the situation calls for it. I saw this quote from Patrick Vieira about the New York City loss, and I'm not going to let him off the hook, because I said that there was sort of an issue with him with being able to adapt to his play. But he said after that 4-0 loss, I am prepared to accept that we are going to lose games, but the way we lost, with the lack of conviction, the lack of competitiveness, this is something I cannot accept. And we don't see that level of sort of ownership. And I think that it bleeds into the club's on-field play.
Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't a disastrous performance, but at the end of the day, what the ownership and accountability is, it seems like, you know, the players say they're aware of the problems, and I think Kai Kamara tweeted after this game too, of like, you know, we're holding each other accountable, this won't happen again, but it still sort of smacks of like, but what's the plan? Like, we know you're upset about mm-hmm. this. We know that you guys don't want to lose. We know that you're trying, but what's not working here? And how are you actually going to address it? Because we can't just continue to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. If we can't put away a game against a team like Minnesota that's been struggling, yes, it's an away game, but if we can't put away those games, you know, how are we reasonably going to make the playoffs, let alone beat the New York Red Bulls or the New York City FCs? There's no adaptability to the game plan.
No. And ultimately, you know, this is, if you can go out there, like there are some teams, if you can go out there and really go for it, you still lose 1-0. And it felt watching the game that there was a real sense of urgency or when it comes to Atlanta, like a sense of play or whatever, right? Like these teams, the teams that are successful offensively in this league are able to put together mm-hmm. a rhythm, right? There's a character to the way they play. And there's just nothing like that with Vancouver.
There certainly isn't. The few other results that we've got to talk about around the league, not a ton happened, or not huge results for any team. LAFC and Dallas battled to a 1-1 draw in a, I would say, fairly tightly contested game, but both teams looked like they were holding back a little bit. And I would say this is probably one of the more underwhelming matches of the weekend.
I think it's kind of funny that you have all of the goals, it's like all the matches, you lined up all the matches in a row and all the goals fell to the to the bottom. You had you know, a bunch of 4-goal, 5-goal games, and then you had a bunch of 1-1s, 0-0s. In the LAFC game, Bejer's goal was great. Lawrence Simon has really taken a key role. And you want to see somebody step up like that. You've seen him a little bit, but I almost feel like it was scoring against Montreal really woke him up a couple of weeks ago when he was able to put that particular ghost to bed.
Absolutely. I mean, what works so well for LAFC is that they do have that defensive piece, right? They early on, we knew that Bob Bradley was wanting to build a club that could compete. And he really focused on building a strong back line. And he did it by, you know, searching out players who were out of contract and a little bit older. They do have an older back line, but they also have an experienced back line. And against such a strong team like Dallas, who defensively has been so sound this season, I thought that this was a good result for both teams. And I don't want to say underwhelming makes it sound like a negative thing, but the two kind of canceled each other out. We saw two teams that are great in attack, but also know when to bunker down and just get shit done defensively. Both goals were great. And all you can really say is fair play. This is the exact result that should have happened with these two teams at this point in the season.
We know that, that unlike basketball, soccer is not a sport where one person can really carry a team. Whereas, like, it really can just come down to one player and how they play in basketball. And I think that if soccer was that kind of – one of the impressions I got in this game is that if soccer was that kind of game, we would recognize that Rudy as the star. I had his name sitting in front of me, and then I moved it. We would, if soccer was a more individual style of game, we would be looking at Maxi Arruti as a real star in the league. And we still do, but like, I think that he's such a dynamic force, and if he was surrounded, I don't even want to say that because it's not like Dallas is bad, but like, he's one of the top players in the league, I would say.
I agree. I think that the other thing, too, though, is that he just fits well within Dallas. And so I don't think he's one of those players that's so electric he could just go to any club. I think Dallas is very much styled their play around him and exploited the things that he's really good at. To take nothing away from how good he is. But you're right, Dallas has very quietly put together one of the best starts to the season in MLS. And they're certainly not a team that we've talked about week to week. And one of the things that I kind of wrote down in my notes is pay more attention to Dallas because, you know, they're doing something right. And I think ultimately it comes down to just a little bit of consistency that defensively they've been able to figure things out. And they've also realized that, sure, it looks great to win games by large goal margins, but sometimes you just need the ugly point. You just need to get the goal. But it bodes very well for them. If you think if in a playoff picture, this is a home game for LAFC and it's a 1-1 draw in the first leg, you know, Dallas has got a really good way of approaching games and a really sound mentality in approaching strong opponents that right now Dallas looks as confident as any team in MLS, not just because of their form, because they haven't been blowing teams away, but they look like a team that knows that they have a plan to win a game and they're able to execute it and they trust each other. I'd say for my money right now, Dallas is one of the best team chemistries in MLS.
Mm-hmm. You see Portland continue to be on, continue sort of its upward climb with a great Diego Fellaini yep. free kick. They did quite well. Seattle and Columbus came to a 0-0, which is, I don't think, something that you would expect out of those two teams.
Not necessarily, but I feel like Columbus has been a little bit more calculated as of late to just try to see a few games out and get points rather than capitulate. That they've been dangerous in attack at times and thrown a little bit too much forward. So I don't think they'll be either team will be too disappointed to take away a point from this game. But Seattle really still struggles to have an answer in missing some key players and just really still seeming to struggle to put it all together for a team that has so much quality on the pitch. I would actually say Columbus is probably the happier out of the two teams here. It wasn't a pretty game by any stretch, but I feel like Seattle feels kind of hard done by in this one.
No doubt. For my goal of the week, I'm trying to find it. As much as is Valeri's free kick and Kyoto's free kick are good, there was one play. I'm trying to remember what team it was. One play was, it was like it almost looked like an offside trap by the open.
Was it Houston's first goal?
Where, I think that might have been it, where you have a player that's clearly hanging out offside that immediately retreats and then two onside players take it. So everybody, it's like the key way of scoring a goal, the best way to get past a defense in MLS is to make them think that an offside has occurred.
Because everyone's just going to stop playing.
I was, you know, not to take anything away from those wonderful finishes, but I was kind of blown away by that act of mad science.
Was that Kyoto's first goal for Houston? Was that it?
No, well, the first goal, Kyoto was on set pieces. I thought I would have to take a
goal of the week is by a person you don't know. That's so MLS.
The goal of the week was so memorable that I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't tell you who scored it.
It's in the net. It's in the net.
It looks like this one. No, I don't think. No, it wasn't.
Okay, well, while you look that up, also note that SKC beat Colorado 1-0, but that's about the only thing you can say about that match. It wasn't a pretty one, and I'll just add the commentary of Sporting should have done more with this, and good for Colorado for holding on, but by all accounts, a kind of meh match, but another win for Sporting KC.
A game so forgettable that I literally forgot about it as I was actually looking at it.
Still looking. I can do my goal of the week. Killing time. It's me. Killing time.
Maybe you.
My player of the week and my goal of the week goes to my perennial soccer young athlete. No, I'm not setting this up well. Look, we all know I have a thing for Anthony Jackson-Hamel. The first goal is brilliant. The little nutmeg. Yeah. He gets a little bit lucky, but to get the brace, I think his first goal is my goal of the week, and he's definitely my player of the week. A player, young players that take their chances. That's what it's about. This is a game where he proved he's going to be a starter. And just seeing Raheem Edwards, recently traded from Toronto, who never really got his chance there. Great to see him on the board as well. So, hats off to Anthony Jackson-Hamel. Honorable mentions to Raheem Edwards.
I talk shit about Dom Dwyer, so I'll give him credit.
He had a great game.
In terms of my player of the week for breaking the dam in that match. Who is your team of the week?
My team of the week is probably unsurprising, so I'm going to add the caveat. This is my coach of the week as well. Jesse Marsh in New York Red Bulls. This was a brilliant tactical breakdown of a very good side, and I think all credit goes to the coaches. Certainly the players had to execute it, but it was a brilliantly executed game plan from start to finish. So I feel like this one's a no-brainer. It's got to be New York Red Bulls, but extra special credit to Jesse Marsh.
Well, I keep making this point just because they're not really one of one of the teams you think about first, but certainly haven't like necessarily rolled high at the on the standings. But I think that they really could. They have that adaptability and they have that passion that could really take them far.
Absolutely.
Off the
absolutely article. Yes.
Off the pitch, the Columbus Crew owner Anthony Precourt is set a deadline for the end of June for Austin to make its decision stadium wise. They're looking to get a stadium deal set. They say, you know, June is not considered a drop dead deadline, according to the Austin American Statesman. But they want a deal to be done before City Council goes on its recess on June 28th. So that's kind of that's what you're going to see there as being the sort of the deadline. The other thing, and I'm curious to see what you think about this. There is some rumor mill churning that Wayne Rooney might be going to DC United.
Yeah, it could happen. Considering how much they just shelled out for the stadium that we're about to see open. Should it though? God, at this point, like, why not? Like, sign Thierry Henry to a 2-week contract and try to get a few points on the board. DC United has fallen so flat. They need something to excite them. And of course, Rooney's not going to be the answer to all their problems. Does he fit within their system? Probably not. But DCU needs to do something. Stranger things have happened, and I would imagine Rooney wants to keep playing. He's pretty much out of time in the Premier League. He's really not up to the level anymore there. But he could have success here. And I imagine that some of his counterparts that have come over recently are going to be talking to him, and he's going to be asking questions. And quite frankly, I think it could probably be a bit of a deal at the end of the day. Is Rooney's at the point where he just wants to continue playing, and he's willing probably to take a pay cut for it. So the hair plugs are paid for. Why not? You know, I'm not a Rooney fan, but DC needs somebody. They need something. And yeah, why not?
I think that I don't know. We've talked a little bit about, like, obviously when you're a goal scorer at a high level as Rooney was, that you're probably going to find some sort of success at sort of a lower level. But I don't think it's like the type of player that has lost their pace. It is not to not to insult Rooney, but one-dimensional in this game.
Yeah, he's not so good that he really is sort of a shadow of his former self at this point. Like, he is a great player and has done great things, but at this point, this really would feel like kind of a retirement move as opposed to something that would truly have an impact. That being said, DC's got to pay for a new stadium, so whatever puts bums in seats, I guess. Think of him as a key business indicator.
This is what makes me kind of worry about it, is that DC's about to open a big old stadium. They need somebody, they need a player to sort of pin that on to draw people into mm-hmm. that big old stadium. But they're not the kind of team that has been built in recent years around that that super big star. Like, I don't know that you could say for sure that they've had like a real successful star since they sold mm-hmm. De Rosario. Somebody's going to tell me that's wrong. But I don't think, because they're not a team that's built up in that way, I really think that pretending to be one just because you have a big fancy new stadium is not going to be, is something that, you know, it could fall apart a little bit. And there's not a lot to, the season has not been going so well that you can afford to, for things to fall apart even worse than it is now.
True, but yeah, what point do you take a gamble though? And certainly there's better value for money, and if they had good scouts, they could probably find somebody for half the price that could do twice the job. But at this point, they might just be looking to salvage the season and put some bums in seats, and, you know, maybe Rooney's a good option. I'm not saying I would do it, but I certainly don't think it's out of the realm of question at this point. Some other news from around the league also is that MLS and FC Cincinnati kind of made a joint nothing statement beyond to say, we're still talking, we're still buds, things are moving in the right direction, but nothing's set in stone yet.
That doesn't sound like things were set in the wrong. Things are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I don't really understand the method of MLS holding press conferences that just say, we've had lots of talks and things look promising, but we can't say anything further. It's still an open playing field. And then FC Cincinnati's like, yep, we also think those things are true, but we're excited. I feel like at this point, if they can secure the stadium stuff, it's probably a foregone conclusion. I don't understand why we need a press conference to say nothing. But it seems like possibly FC Cincinnati is maybe a slight step closer to their MLS franchise. And have also been having a good mm-hmm. USL season as well.
Where can we find you?
You can online? Find me online at That's So MLS on Twitter. Yeah, that's it. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I'm an editor at Howler, whatahowler.com. You can find this podcast at thatssomls.com and on iTunes. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And you can also come to me at Team Bates to find out what goal was my goal of the week.
If you could just... Yeah, we never did get back to that. Do you want some more time? Should we just sit here in silence and wait for it? It's whatever. It's fine. The moment's passed.
And until I figure it out, maybe it's okay. It's enough.
It's okay, because you might win anyway. Oh, dear.
But still, try to avoid
better, soccer gods. I don't think it's going to be good. All right, cool. Great.
One of these days, I'll find out. I'll find out who's going.